really hard to stay on the fixed side. I don't sell anything that requires a variable license. Twice in my career, I was approached and they said I ought to consider it. They said you could probably be in a position to collect a lot of assets under management fees, and you could probably go around and instead of getting paid once on an annuity, you could have a lot of money under management. Through the years, I deferred a lot of money. I tried to live on less than what I made, so I had extra money, and companies offered deferral programs, and I always signed up for them, and I had money in the market, and I was losing money on it. And I just didn't like the feeling that came with that, and I wasn't any good at it. And I met with a couple stockbrokers, and they said, well, here's what we need to do, and it just never seemed like it worked very well for me, and I loved the fact that whenever the market turned, I wouldn't get calls from people saying they were upset about losing money. And all the life insurance and all the annuities, everything pretty much had strong guarantees to them. Now, that doesn't mean it's the only show in town, and it doesn't mean that those people have some advantages when they own variable life and the accounts are segregated. But plain vanilla products on the general account side have always been what I've written. And for the most part, I've been paid retail commissions. I know some people, and I've presented some products where I've taken a haircut on them when you get in corporate situations. And I've always pretty much been used to getting, I've sold off-the-shelf products and gotten full compensation for it. Not rich compensation, but full compensation. So that, was always kind of interesting to me. I'll give you an economic forecast. There's no such thing as bad weather, only inappropriate clothing. There's no such thing as a bad economy, only inappropriate thinking. I said this morning, Dickens was right when he wrote, it's the best of times, it's the worst of times. It is. It truly is. But I'm here to tell you, if you decide in your own mind that you can accomplish something, I don't think anybody can stand in your way. And if you decide this is going to be a wonderful career and you're going to have a big year and 12 and 13 is going to be even better, I would think that the odds are 50-50. Just from day one, that'll probably happen. I have written goals that I put together every year, and I come up with a theme, and I still use a product called Week at a Glance. Some of you will remember this. And it's funny, as things go out of style, the people that still buy these things, now we pay more for these because they don't have to make as many. But I have four or five pages actually, of written goals in there. And I try really hard to keep this as simple as possible. Now, business books have a saying there's a thesis or a theme or school of thought that centers around the fact that you have a situation where you do something for 25 years in a row and you have what's called a ceiling of complexity. If you make promises to different people for 25 years in a row, you will have a ceiling of complexity. And it means you either need to hire more people to help you, or you need to have someone in charge of it, or you need to do something. That's a very real situation. But on the product side, I was a member of a study group, I still am, and we used to get together and eat dinner with one another. And admission to the dinner was a sales idea. And in the beginning, we learned a lot from each other. As time went on, it became a gripe session for compliance. And all the people I was in this study group with were on the variable side, and they were very upset with the way compliance was apparently running their practice or ruining their lives or, you know, fill in the blank. So I took really careful notice of that and was kind of interested in it, and ended up thinking the more, the more I can keep this the way I learned it, I think the easier it will be. And I'm just going to try and call on people that do really well, if I can. I was in a church about a month ago and heard a homily. And it went something like this. Most people know four directions: north, south, east, and west. The Navajo Indians have seven directions: north, south, east, west, up, down, and in. And I'm here to tell you, if you understand and appreciate that, you can probably be empathetic with my way of thinking as I've approached my own life and my own business. And if that went over your head, you probably need to be on the variable side of it and stay there. I'm not telling anybody they need to leave that side. I've had people tell me, I wish I could do what you decided to do, and I wish I could leave that end of the business to someone else. But here are some other things I've noticed. There's usually more than one right answer. When people say to me, can you get back to me on email? I say, I can. That'll be the fastest. But if you want my best thinking, I need to sleep on it for a couple of days. I can usually come up with three answers, and I'll present those. And I'd rather have them pick from one of the three than say yes or no from the first one I fire back on an email. Just a thought. It's worked for me. They said when Joe Montana went into a game for the 49ers, he had this innate ability to slow the game down, that he calmed everyone down in the huddle. And I read that, and I thought about it, and I thought that was kind of interesting. And then I read some really interesting things about the coach that had all the success with the 49ers, Bill Walsh. And another coach was talking to him one day, and Walsh said to him, what do you do the last 5 minutes of a practice? And the coach said, what are you talking about? He said, are your practices a couple hours long? He said, yeah. He said, what do you do the last 5 minutes? He said, I don't know. We do something different every day. What do you do? And Bill Walsh said, we do the same thing from 5:25 to 5:30. We start at the 5-yard line and we run our 2-minute drill every day. And when Joe Montana goes into the huddle, they've run that thing so many times, it's second nature to them. And when I read later, players felt like he had the ability to slow the game down. He probably did. He knew what he was doing. So when I meet with people, whether it's about life insurance or disability income or annuities or whatever it is, sometimes it's just about life, I try and slow things down and be a really good listener. And I take notes because I can't remember things the way I used to. I write things down constantly, and I make files on things. I had a friend 25 years ago that had a computer program called Ask Sam. It was a pretty rudimentary program, and it was a series of emails he would send himself, basically. My right hand and my brain are connected. So I take notes constantly, and I save all of them, and I have what are called idea drawers. And sometimes when I get in a funk, or sometimes when I need a mental kick in the pants, I open those drawers up and start going through them. and I can usually get one or two ideas that'll be that will be helpful to me. A friend of mine who's really a bright guy and a great human being and a very loving man told me a couple years ago, I asked him a couple of questions and he said, I want you to remember something. You will gravitate toward your dominant thought. You will gravitate toward your dominant thought. And that burned into my brain. And there's an expectation your own being has that has certain expectations or certain things that you want to have happen. And I found in my own life when I expect good things to happen, most of the time that takes place. One of the things I say to people when they come into the office or whether I meet them at theirs or whether we eat breakfast or lunch together, when you leave here at 2:30, what would you like to have happen so that this has been a good meeting for you? And they'll usually tell me. I had a stockbroker bring a client in to see me. Now, this is one thing. I have one really tiny advantage that some of you don't have. Stockbrokers will bring clients to me. I've tried to cultivate that. And I tell them, I don't manage money. I don't sell mutual funds. If you ever run into a situation, I'll help. And a man brought his client in, and I said to her, what would you like to have happen over the next hour or so when we're here visiting so that when you leave, you feel like it's been time well spent? She said, you know, I'm really glad you asked me that because here's what I want to accomplish. So we got it right out on the table. I didn't just think that up. It took a long time for me to come up with that, but it's been of great help. The other thing is, when I sit down with someone, I say to them, how are you doing on time? And if they're not doing well on time, they tell me. And then I say, you know what? Let me crunch this, or let me suppress this, or let me push this down into the 10-minute version. Is that okay? And I've never had anybody say no. They always say, that'd be great. And we hit the high points. I will draw pictures for people. I have drafting equipment in my office, and I draw pictures for people. Sometimes a picture's worth 1,000 words. I've shown these things to the compliance people. Even though I'm on the fixed side, Mass Mutual, God bless them, they do the right thing, comes into the office once a year and says, we want to see 12 files. And I pull them, and I pull a cross-section. Some of them are rather large. Some of them are in banker's boxes because they don't throw anything away. And they see those pictures, and they look at them. And they're pretty simple pictures. But some people work with numbers, and some people work with pictures, and sometimes I ask them. I ask an oral surgeon one time that's a really good client of mine, what do you need with high eye-hand coordination to be a really good oral surgeon? And he said, you have to think spatially. And I said, what do you mean by that? And he said, you have to imagine the tooth and what you're actually doing to it. Sometimes they used to be called schematics, when you would look at a stereo and figure out how the thing works. So I've done that with, and I'll tell people, I want you to think of me as chairman of your executive benefits committee. And they'll say, okay. And I'll say, here's what I would recommend to you if I were making a report. And sometimes I'll have a picture. I color them in with magic markers. I keep all this stuff in one drawer. There's a drafting supply equipment company within 5 minutes of my office that have blown up things for me for years. And they aren't clients. They probably one of them asked one time, what do you sell? And I told them. But it helps people understand what's going on. I've copied dollar bills before and have chopped, you know, cut them up so that they know what's going where. And it's just one way to reach someone that might need some understanding. That's all we're trying to do. The more a person understands what they're doing, the better the client they're going to be. I think that goes without saying, and that goes whether you sell very complex things or whether you sell really simple products. I'm going to share something with you. There's a show on the first week of December every year. It lasts 2 hours. It's called the Kennedy Center Honors. Anybody ever watch it? They give the United States government, this is the kind of country we live in, when you perform or act or sing, whatever it is, we give great honor to people that are willing to do that. Because not all of them became rich overnight. So we actually give a presidential honor, and they do it at the Kennedy Center. And there are 5 honorees each year. They just announced them a couple weeks ago. So I'm home last December, and I don't watch, you're looking at a fellow that doesn't watch that much television. I love to watch golf and not too much else. I watch the Cubs from time to time, and my wife kids me about it, and I'll watch college sports. But I'm watching the Kennedy Center Honors because I make the effort, and they had one of the women being honored. It was one of my favorite actresses. And Meryl Streep. Anything she's in, I can pretty well believe whatever she plays. And they went back to her beginning days. She performed Shakespeare. She was an accomplished actress. Well, I started to daydream about that. And I thought, you know, if an actor can perform Shakespeare, the theory is they can then do comedy, drama, television, they can be in advertisements, doesn't matter. Once an actor or an actress can do Shakespeare. And I started to think to myself, most of us learned how to sell life insurance exceptionally well before we sold other products. And once you're able to sell life insurance really well, you're classically trained. Now, you may want to sell other products, and you may be recruited to sell other products, and you may become really good at selling other products. Because selling life insurance comes with some heartache. It comes with some sweat, and it comes with some tears. It can be, it's the hardest, highest paying work I know of in the financial industry. But I thought to myself, you know, at the end of the day, if somebody looked at my body of work, they would probably say, or I would say to them, I was classically trained. I came in at the end of the golden era, the life insurance business, when there weren't that many products to sell, and we sold them exceptionally well. It was an advantage I have with the age I have and the number of years I've been doing this. And it was kind of an epiphany, and you get those from time to time. That idea about my briefcase came one day. I was having lunch with a man, a client of mine, and this fellow is the same oral surgeon that said you have to be able to think spatially. He's a big fan of the San Francisco Giants, and he loves Willie Mays, who was a really great outfielder, probably the best, one of the best outfielders from the 50s and 60s. And I said to him, I wonder what happened to the glove Mays wore the day he made the catch that he made over his shoulder that he didn't see, but lives forever. And those of you that are in the audience that remember this know what I'm talking about. And I was able to find one of those that was autographed, a black and white photo, and I gave it to him for Christmas one year. And it hangs in his office. Well, this guy Googled it, and it was a McGregor mitt, and Willie Mays would get a brand new mitt every year and oil it and work it and break it in. He gave that glove away. And I started thinking, you know, what if that glove had ended up on the hand of a high school baseball player who rode the bench, and it ended up in his parents' basement? You know, the glove isn't going to know, but it's fascinating to think. And I started a daydream, and I thought, you know, that briefcase I bought has kind of had a front row seat to all the mistakes and failures and all the tough days and all the no's and the occasional yeses and, you know, my little path and my little world. And I'm the only one that really knows all the ins and outs, but that briefcase has been with me a long time. And it ended up kind of being another epiphany. There's a really great life underwriter in Champaign, Illinois, named Dave Downey. Just a wonderful human being who's kind of a guru. He's such a deep thinker. He's a lawyer by education, but he's a life underwriter by choice. And he will say just about every time he speaks, if you can understand the why, you can always figure out the how. And that's kind of where I'm at with this. I don't have a process for sales. I should say I don't have a sales process, but I do have a process that leads to sales. I do social work for the affluent. I'm in the business of creating solutions. And I don't manage people or money. I try and manage relationships. That's never been work for me, having relationships with people and trying to find people that where it clicked. Now, a broker told me that his first boss said to him, 2% of the population's just like you, and your job is to go out and find that 2% and turn them into clients. And he told me this at breakfast within the last 12 months. And I thought to myself, that's a really interesting idea. And in some respects, that's how some of us build clientels. But I would think that 2% number might be a little low. If you work on people skills and become a really good listener, I think you can turn that into a lot higher number. I can't remember this morning. I think I said there's a big difference between something that's important and something that's urgent. Did I mention that? A lot of people have forgotten this, and here's where I'm at on that. I'll give you 1 minute on it, and then we'll move on. It used to be a phone call was a private act. I remember the first time I heard someone had a cell phone in their car. Mobile phone. It took up half the trunk, and there was a mobile operator, and the guy had a big antenna on the car. He had an Olds 98, and it was kind of a novelty. And then people started carrying beepers, and the only ones you see carrying beepers anymore are old doctors or funeral directors. It's kind of interesting. Then people started carrying cell phones, first in bags, then phones that looked like Maxwell Smart Shoe, and now it's, you know, iPhones or Blackberries. So when I first started, and I'm not old and I'm not young, if you got back to someone with a letter in a week, it was considered to be reasonable. And now if you did that, I still send letters out to people because they're read now more than they used to be. But a lot of people would think you were a caveman. Fax machines sped things up. And now if you send a fax, they think you're a cave dweller. But we've gotten to the point where people have this fascination of how fast can you get back to me? Anthony, who's really great, who's really bright, who's really good at what he does, thinks, boy, the way to do this is to send something before you're in your car and before the person has a chance to look at it. And I probably would tell you a handwritten note would mean more to me. Or I leave notes on people's voicemails if I know something happened. And I tell them I'm always cheering for them or that they're a good person. You know, it's interesting how these things are done. The only thing I can control Monday when I get back to work or the rest of this year or 2013 is how many times I pick up the phone and how kind I am to other people. And I think most people want to work with others that are kind-hearted, and I think most people want to work with people that care. Every once in a while, I'm getting better at this. As time goes on, I can figure out when I think people don't care about it, and I try and avoid them. Being happy doesn't mean things are perfect. It just means you decided to look beyond perfection. There was a country music song entitled "She's Close Enough to Perfect for Me." And I, you know, if you're a perfectionist, I'm sorry. I like doing things really well, but they don't need to be perfect because this career is perfectly imperfect. And if you're in it long enough, you'll figure out, hey, you know what? All things considered, we're pretty lucky to be doing this. But it's not really well known. It's too hard for most people. The first 10 years are too difficult for most people. I can't remember if I mentioned this morning, there was a really long list of things I didn't like. Did I say this when I first started? And there was a really short list of things I did like. And today those lists have switched. There's a really long list of things I love about being in the life insurance profession. And there's a really short list of things I don't like, and I pretty well can delegate the things I don't like. And that's, that's pretty good. I asked a fellow that was really a kind-hearted man and a wise human being, Dave Hilton. He's been gone now for about 15 years. He was, in 77, they wrote, in the Wall Street Journal, when they write human interest stories on the front page, it's kind of on the right-hand side, right center column. They write one every day. Now it's down in the bottom half. They wrote one about Dave Hilton in 77, the life of a successful life insurance agent. It's probably the best story, best press we've ever had. Dave Hilton was a high-producing, hard-charging Northwestern Mutual agent in Chicago with Al Granum, and he was president of the Million Dollar Roundtable. And I said, you've had a wonderful life and a great career. What's the toughest part about all this? And he said, enjoying the present. He said, it's really difficult. And I can understand that. And the more, I think the really wise people know how to do that. And I'm trying, but I'm not quite there yet. Leonardo da Vinci in the 1500s was quoted as saying, simplicity is the ultimate form of sophistication. So when I've dealt with engineers over the years and they have said, I need this to be more complex, I tell them we're probably going to have problems. I don't think this is going to work very well for us, because my job is to take complex situations and make them simple. I have a fellow in the healing arts that owns a bunch of life insurance, and he decided to switch CPAs, and he went to an out-of-town firm in another state that came in, and I get an email from him, and he said, I need in-force ledgers and an inventory of all the policies I have, and if you can, he's coming in next week, can you have lunch with us? He wants to know why I own all this life insurance. Not the kind of email, you're dying to get. And I thought, okay. And I put it all together, and I put a letter together explaining what each policy was supposed to do, and he had a bunch of them, and we sat down for lunch. And the guy was, I guess, going to be the bad cop that day, and I said, before you go any further, I want you to know something. There isn't a thing that Joe wouldn't do for Becky. And when a man loves a woman, she gets better looking every day. And I said, if you were killed by an impaired driver tonight, how much would you want Becky to sue for? And he said, a lot more than that. And he pointed at the number, which was a pretty good sized number for anybody. It was well into seven figures. And I looked at the CPA and I said, if you can understand that, you and I will get along great. And if you can't, you and I are probably going to have problems. And he said, I can understand it. And that was the end of it. And he still has that CPA and every stick, every nickel of that premium. That's a premium that's well into six figures, is all in force. So sometimes it's best to stand your ground and not feel like you have to be bullied. I mentioned golf this morning, and people think if they play better, they'll enjoy the game more. Well, the truth of the matter is, you know, in reality, if they enjoy it more, they'll play better. And I'll say this again. People think if they play better, they'll enjoy the game more. But the truth of the matter is, if they enjoy it more, they'll play better. And the exact same thing is true in the life insurance profession. Winston Churchill said, success is going from failure to failure without the loss of enthusiasm. And some days, you know, I'll tell you what happens to a lot of agents. They get success, they taste success, they do pretty well, and then they don't want to call on new people because it's hard and it hurts their feelings, and they don't want to hear no, and they like how cuddly and cozy it is to go visit with old clients. But the agents that really grow, if you said, well, why do some agents really grow? They get the same 168 hours a week. Why do some agents really grow and get to a different level than the other ones? It's because they've refused to plateau. And they kept doing the same things that got them there as opposed to just easing off the pedal. And I'll tell you something, it really keeps you humble if you keep calling on new people. Okay, and it isn't that you need the business. It isn't that you need an extra $5. It isn't that you don't have any pride. It's that you just want to keep getting better. I've read The New Yorker for years. I started reading that thing in college. It's a real offbeat magazine, and it has funny cartoons in it, and it has really long, sometimes weird, esoteric, dry, offbeat articles. Sometimes it has really funny things in it. A couple years ago, it had an article in there about a surgeon that wanted to improve. And he invited a retired surgeon in that was his professor to watch him on 12 operations. And he said, I want you to take notes and tell me how I can be more efficient. And the old surgeon watched him. True story. It was a long article in The New Yorker. And they got together and he said, here are the things I noticed where you're not using economy of motion. And a couple of them are really big. And I thought to myself, that can be applied to what we do. The top-notch, top-flight agents, like a John Homer, is always looking for a new idea and a new way to do something better. And he's never going to be happy with status quo. You know, you always want to grow a little bit. It's exciting, and it's also a little unnerving, and it may not feel as comfortable as going back to old clients. But you can always go back to old clients. But if you really want to grow, every night I leave the office about 5:45. I make one extra phone call. I punch in the number one more time. I call somebody. And sometimes it's the best call I make all day. Sometimes they're not there. For the young people in the room, how do you get in front of Mr. Big? How do you get in front of somebody that owns, you know, a successful company? You call before 8 a.m., before the gatekeeper's there, or you call about 5:30 or 5:45. He'll probably still be in there. I flew home from the NAFA meeting a couple weeks ago, and struck up a really nice conversation with a man next to me who owned a couple of car dealerships in Cleveland. And I was looking at what he was working on. I said, "Are you in the car business?" And he said, "I am." He said, "I've got two boys that run each store, and one of them's in the back. I was upgraded." And so he was upgraded, and so was I. And so we struck up this little conversation. And, you know, one thing leads to another. And, you know, the situation was very interesting, what he was trying to accomplish and how he was going about it. I said, "How's your health been?" He said, "You know, it was perfect until we were adding on to the house. And I went out after a Cavs game. My wife was in Florida. And I walked out to see what progress they made. And I tripped and I fell into an 8-foot cement retaining area." And he said, "Somehow I got out of there and I went to bed that night. And I woke up the next morning and the bed was covered with blood. And I spent 3 weeks in intensive care." And I said, "I need to ask you a tough question. Do you own long-term care?" And he looked at me and he said, "Not a nickel." And I said, "Well, you don't have to buy it from me. There's plenty of people in Cleveland that sell it." But I said, "Boy, you're a great candidate to buy some." And I haven't been good at selling that stuff. There are people in my hometown that I haven't called on for whatever reason. There are still people that I hear about that I didn't know from the man in the moon. And you live in one of the best zip codes in the country, or some of the best zip codes in the Western U.S. or at this meeting. You know, some really great things can happen. But success leaves clues. Successful people stay on top of things. Successful agents stay on top of things. And unsuccessful people let things stay on top of them. There are agents you know who don't waste much time, and there's something about them. There's a look in their eye that says they're busy, they're making things happen, and you better get out of their way. And other agents have all the time in the world. There was one coffee shop I used to meet one particular client in, and whenever I met him there was one particular agent who always came in at the same time for a cup of coffee, who had all the time in the world. And you take notice of stuff like that. I'll start winding this up. As time marches on, I've noticed that I pay less attention to what people say and more attention to what people do. Well done is always better than well said. And I love it when people underpromise and overdeliver, as opposed to the opposite. And if you're in sales, if you underpromise and overdeliver, there won't be a whole lot of competition. Hemingway was quoted toward the end of his life as saying he rewrote the final paragraph in A Farewell to Arms 39 times because he wanted it to be as good as he knew it could be. He admitted that. And I think that's a strength. It doesn't mean he's a perfectionist. It didn't mean he was a perfectionist. It just means, you know, there's one way to do something the best you can. And if you're talented at it, why not try and do it as well as can be done? When Edison tried to do his darndest to invent the electric light bulb, he kept track of how many times he failed. And somebody said, "Doesn't that make you mad? You're at 10,000 now and you still don't have one that works?" And he said, "No, that's not true." And I'm going to read this to make sure I get it right. "I have not failed. I just found 10,000 ways that didn't work." Michelangelo thought the art was in the paint. All he had to do was apply it. He thought David existed in the marble. I read that. And it was, and again, you have to be looking for this stuff if you really want, if you want your life to be different. And I wanted mine to be different. I still do. And I look for things like this. And what you believe in, when you read things, you will instantly find stuff that you can attach your star to. But I read Aunt Michelangelo said, was quoted as saying, he thought the art was in the paint. All he had to do was mix it and apply it. He thought David existed in the marble. All he had to do was uncover him. And I thought that was just fascinating. And I've said to people, my way of uncovering this is to ask you questions, if that's okay. And most people are okay with it. Not everybody, but most people are okay with it. I can't remember if I said this morning, but I was asked over the years, I've been asked a number of times. There's an Indiana University has an extension in my hometown. It has 7,500 students there. They have MBA classes, and I've known some of the people that taught them. And I've been to Notre Dame's MBA classes, and there's another school in town called Bethel College. They do a great job. And I've been lucky enough to go in there and talk to the students. And I usually say to them, how many of you value your independence? And all the hands go up. And then I say, how many of you think that will change when you're my age? And it gets worse. As you get older, you don't want to take baloney from anybody. I'm here to tell you. You know that, and I know that. And I love being self-employed, and I like the fact some guy in Hartford didn't say, well, you need to be on this side of the house. I decided that, and I decided how many cases I was going to write, and I decided how we were going to do them, and I decided we would write a cover letter on every single piece of business we sent in. I was in an agency yesterday, and somebody said, well, we got a problem with a case because the guy likes to go out of the country to another country to do his hobby, hunting, and, you know, things like that. If you cover them up front in a letter to an underwriter, you're halfway home. Make sure whatever you tell an underwriter is the truth. If they catch you in a situation where he or she thinks you knew something and you didn't disclose it, or you gave them information they think you knew was faulty, you're in a bad light. Places that are hard to get to are often great. And now I'll wind this up before I come down. And I'll go back to golf for a minute. There are a lot of similarities between golf and life, and golf and the life insurance business, the life insurance profession. The best always make it look simple. A high premium's always been placed on honor. Some absolutely great friendships are formed in business, in our business, and on the golf course. Both of these are crafts that had to be passed down from someone who cared enough to teach something worth learning. No 2 days are ever alike. No 2 rounds are ever alike. In both, consistent and boring are good. In both, you're going to find what's called grinders. You know what a grinder is. These are people who don't complain, who keep their head down, and at the end of the day or the end of the year, you look over and say, you know, I wasn't paying that much attention to you out there, but you did a heck of a job. Grinders don't complain. They make their own luck. Both are passions that value independent thinking. In both, a poor worker blames his tools. In both, patience is always rewarded. And I'll close by saying 3 things come to mind. There's a fellow named Rick Thomas that's been a great producer, a longtime roundtable member out of Tampa, Florida. And he was trying to place a large amount of life insurance on a man who owned a company. And the man said, okay, why should I buy this? And Rick's reply was so simple, it was brilliant. He said, when you die, there's going to be a meeting. Your widow will be there. Your lawyer will be there. Your CPA will be there. Your kids will probably be there. And if I'm there, it'll be a better meeting. Jean Mann, I think I mentioned this morning, but I can't remember, from Thousand Oaks, California, said to me, "You know how people treat a waitress when the breakfast order isn't right? They jump all over. That's how they'll treat you when things aren't going well, if you don't pick your clients carefully." And the last thing I'll tell you, Mill Grauer from Chicago, 85 years old, true gentleman, past president of the Round Table, said, "Speak softly, dress simply, and live quietly." And as Roy Rogers used to say, "Happy trails until we meet again." Wonder about, or maybe questions that you have. We have a few minutes left. I'd love to hear them. I appreciate you being in here. It's a beautiful day out. Russ? Oh, it's a good looking pen. No, I've got his contact information out. I'm going to give him a choice. I'm licensed in Ohio. I'm going to tell him I can come over. I can refer somebody to you. I'm going to copy his son on it. I don't make a practice of doing that, but I do feel like I need to follow up with him. And I'll share something with you. I love to read. I read all the time. And I'd ask him, something was said about golf, and I was reading that Hank Haney book. And I just finished it. I said, "Have you read this?" And he said, "No." And I said, "Well, now you can." And I inscribed it to him. And I said, "Here, I'm going to give this to you." The book had been given to me, and I enjoyed reading it. So I know he'll remember who I am. But he was kind enough to get up. He got out of his seat. He got into his briefcase and got a card for me. And I'll make sure at least it'll go to the front of his mind for a couple days. But there's a case where, boy, somebody, there's a real need for that. And there was a stigma about selling disability income insurance a number of years ago. A lot of people didn't do it. And that has passed. And the same thing happened with long-term care. This morning, I think it was Anthony, or forgive me, it was our first speaker, said, "Long-term care probably won't exist in 15 years. That wouldn't surprise me. I presented some last week and looked at the pricing, and I thought, well, they're getting closer, but it came out of the blocks pretty cheap. I don't think it was priced correctly. I think the people that bought it probably got a heck of a deal. The healthy people that haven't collected probably are going to pay a heck of a lot more. Anybody else? I knew Roland Rasmussen just a little, enough to say hello to him. He was a real gentleman. And I did get to know Jeff Taggart. He was a great guy. And I can't tell you enough how kind people are in your part of the country, in Utah, and what an honor it is to come here. I've heard about this symposium for years, and was told that I would really enjoy it, and it's a high honor for a president of the Roundtable to come to Utah and speak at this. So my hat is off to you, and I can't thank you enough. Thank you.